Hello and welcome to the ERP Organizational Change Journal podcast, brought to you by Nessel & Associates. Nessel & Associates is an ERP organizational change management firm serving the private equity industry. I'm your co-host, Jonathan Donald, the founder of Invert Ventures, a change strategy firm, and I'm here with my friend and colleague, Dr. Jack Nessel, the founder of Nessel & Associates, and the host of the ERP Organizational Change Journal podcast. The ERP Organizational Change Journal seeks to share expertise, insight, and create effective conversation to help guide ERP organizational change to real, measurable, and verified success, expanding what we can see so we can act in a more effective way. We seek to promote, connect, and foster relationships in the ERP organizational change community. The primary purpose of this podcast is to discuss, share, and reflect upon effective and efficient ways in which to realize ERP organizational change success. We will discuss the people, process, and technological components of ERP organizational change. This podcast is intended as a forum to study, share, and discuss ERP organizational change. It's our intention for this to be a collaboration tool and resource. We hope that you find this podcast useful as we share lessons learned, discover best practices, and explore the human elements and components of ERP organizational change. Our podcast draws on knowledge from extensive research, collaborative learning, practitioner experience of both project successes and project failures. A general review of the themes of ERP and organizational change practice, literature, and research suggests that understanding and critically having an awareness of tactics founded in principle is fundamental to ERP organizational change success. Our podcast will discuss these tactics, explore these approaches, and discover the principles that they are founded upon so that they may prove to be useful in addressing ERP organizational change challenges and risks.
In this episode, we will discuss ERP, a practitioner's view, with Mr. Bob Busey. Bob is an IT and business professional with 20 plus years of cross-functional experience in the implementation and support of global enterprise systems. Bob has over 15 years of experience supporting warehouse management, materials management, and logistics execution processes in SAP, including over 14 years in a validated life sciences environment. Bob has served in project implementation and support roles for five different multinational corporations as a service delivery manager for a provider of SAP services and as an adjunct lecturer where he taught ERP. In addition, Bob has been actively involved with the America's SAP User Group for several years and currently serves as a chair for the ASUG Carolinas chapter. Bob is a lifelong learner with a passion for education and sharing of knowledge and experience with others. So this week, we will further discuss some key influences to ERP optimization, including definition of success, ERP success rates, technical debt, critical keys to project management, ERP expectations, role of corporate culture, common challenges and pitfalls, learning and development, ERP organizational change conflict, leadership styles, critical success factors, and more. Bob, thank you so much for being on our show today. Looking forward to this conversation.
Well, thank you for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Well, we certainly appreciate it. All right, let's get started. So one of our favorite questions, and we've asked many practitioners, is the same one we're going to ask you. That question is, how would you define ERP?
That's a really good question. And there's a reason, I'm sure, why you ask each of your guests that question, because if you ask five different people, you're likely to get five different answers.
Yeah.
So I'll give you the Bob Busey answer, which is that I would define an ERP system as an integrated system that provides a holistic view of the organization's data, as well as near real-time transactional updates across multiple areas of the business. And I'm tacking on that latter part of the definition based upon a statement that I once heard from a very wise consultant, which is that at the core, the purpose of an ERP system is to automate financial postings.
Interesting.
So that's my detailed answer, but I also like to provide kind of a high-level summary definition. which is that I like to summarize ERP as the blending of business and technology to achieve a desired business outcome. And the reason I mention that is because I have this feeling that ERP has become viewed too much as a technology exercise and not enough as a business exercise. And some of this is due to the emphasis upon technology by the software providers, SAP, Oracle, Microsoft, Workday. And I get that because that's their livelihood, is to turn out great ERP technology products, and they do it really well. But one outcome of that is that I feel that there's this belief that has developed that any business problem can be solved by just throwing enough technology at it. And as you and I well know, technology, apart from effective organizational change management, is just often not successful.
So true, Bob. Hey, I liked your answer. That was nice. And I really like how you highlighted this idea to automate financial postings. I think you're one of the very few that added that piece. And you know, I think, Bob, I guess the way I normally explain it is, if you think about it, at the end of the day, ERP transactions really represent one of two things, either the movement of dollars or the transformation of dollars. You know, from the time that you order from a customer and the goods ship across the ocean, and then from the time you hit your four walls of your business to the time you ship it and everything in between, in general, that's the case. So the more that you can model your physical world so that logically you're capturing these transactions accurately and correctly and timely, the more accurate at the end of the day your financials are going to be, because every transaction one way or another finds its way to your GL or your chart of accounts or your financial reporting, right?
Absolutely.
And what does that do for us? Well, that creates true business intelligence and accurate business intelligence, and therefore ability to make very informed decisions, and therefore a healthy organization. So
absolutely.
Nice answer. So next question, suppose you're leading a kickoff meeting for an organization that's just starting an ERP implementation. How would Bob Busey define and describe for them, quote unquote, success in terms of ERP organizational change?
So I've had the privilege of being part of a couple of very successful projects, and they were both characterized from the very beginning by an executive mandate for change to happen. And I think that's really where it all begins. And in each case, it was really about casting a vision for the future and then successfully directing people toward that vision. There's a metaphor that I've heard that I really like, that the train's leaving the station and we want you to be on that train. And this, of course, applies to projects that truly represent business transformation versus just a technical lift and shift where we're just shoehorning our legacy processes into a new ERP platform. Now, one very real challenge that goes along with this is that there are sometimes people in your organization who don't share that vision. And I've seen cases where employees were actively, publicly opposed to the vision and had to actually be asked to leave the organization. And, you know, it's something that we don't ever like to see happen, but the reality is that for transformation of this scale, it's unfortunately sometimes necessary. And the reality is that if you're in this organization and you aren't comfortable with this new vision, you don't believe that you'll ever be comfortable with it, you probably need to be finding someplace else to work anyway.
That's definitely touching on a pretty critical topic, I would think, with successful ERP change. And that's the idea of, you know, the people side of that equation and organizational culture and alignment and vision, such a critical point. So, Bob, how would you describe your general understanding of ERP implementation success rates in the field based on your own work, anecdotal evidence or of others, or your research? What's your thoughts on that?
So I know you've had some other academics on the podcast. I mean, certainly Dr. Marianne Bradford, who I know very well, who have done a lot of formal research in ERP. I have some involvement in academics that have not done that kind of research. So my answer is based upon the anecdotal evidence gained from my own experience, as well as what I see and hear from other organizations through my involvement with ASUG. Mm-hmm. And I'll confess up front that I kind of had some preconceived ideas here based on my own experience, kind of led me to believe that more companies got it wrong than got it right. But the reality is the scope of my own experience is not a large enough sample size. And when I go out and look at statistics from much larger surveys, you know, those statistics state otherwise. You know, one of the best sources of information around this is the annual ERP report from Panorama. When I went back and looked at the 2020 report, it showed that more than half of the organizations, 61% of them that anticipated specific benefits, actually realized those benefits. So there's clearly, I think, more companies than not out there that are being successful on their ERP journey.
Yeah, that's interesting because 61% is still a pretty low number. I know in my line of work, especially in private equity, that number would really scare. That would scare a lot of people. And then the question we would have behind that is, you know, that 60, and I've seen very similar statistics across some different research, but 61% that realized the benefits. But then the question underneath that is, well, what was the time, money, and effort cost to do that? You may have realized the benefit, but did it take two or three times longer in the timeline or two or three times more in the budget? You know, I think that's a loaded and very interesting question. So, Bob, I do want to share with our listeners an article that you wrote. This was a LinkedIn article. I believe you did it in, I think it was March of 2021. Yeah. And I thought it was very interesting. And I just wanted to take a second and have you elaborate on this for our listeners. But it was called Technical Debt and ERP. And we'll be sure to include the show notes for this podcast. But can you share with our listeners, what is technical debt and what was your main purpose behind this article?
So thank you for bringing up that article. It's always gratifying when you publish something like that to know that somebody actually read it. The term actually came up in a conversation with some coworkers, and at the time, it was not a term that I was very familiar with. And so I wanted to dig into it a bit further, and so I started at the source of all knowledge, Wikipedia, and found this definition, which is that technical debt is a concept in software development that reflects the implied costs of additional rework caused by choosing an easy solution now instead of using a better approach that would take longer.
Mm-hmm.
And I really liked it. I could have kept digging and done more research to find what other people thought about it, but that definition was really enough to get me thinking about the direction I wanted to go with this in ERP. Because ERP implementations are complex and disruptive with a time frame that sometimes can stretch into years. Conversely, business moves quickly.
Yeah.
Even after go live, post-implementation changes in ERP often don't move quickly enough to keep up with the required speed of business change.
Yeah.
So you may be familiar with a couple of terms from classic Six Sigma, which is the voice of the customer and the voice of the process.
Yeah, right.
And
right.
In this particular case, the voice of the customer is saying, I need it in 2 weeks. And the voice of the process is saying, sorry, can't do it. And there's a lot of reasons for this, going back to project methodology, waterfall versus agile versus DevOps. But the bottom line is that the gap is often bridged by purchasing another off-the-shelf solution, or IT comes up with some sort of a workaround, writes some quick and dirty code, knowing that they could provide a better solution if they had more time to work on it. And eventually, the business becomes dependent upon these well-intentioned shortcuts, and they sort of evolve into the strategic solution. And the result, as I stated in the article, is technical debt in the form of increased applications, interfaces, and custom code, which may also have an impact upon future implementations or upgrades that you need to do. And so the conclusion of the article was that obviously solving this isn't easy. It requires some vision and foresight on the part of business and IT to lay out a roadmap for the future that allows the organization to get ahead of that curve. It's easier said than done, but the goal is a more compact and flexible foundation that allows the business to respond and adapt quickly without incurring this additional technical debt.
Right.
And technology is certainly a big part of it, but it has to be implied in tandem with strong business process and organizational change management. All of this goes right back to my earlier belief about solving business problems by just throwing technology at them. In reality, it's just not that simple.
Yeah, really nice article, Bob. I liked it and some great points. Like you said, I think that, you know, sometimes implementing technology perhaps is, you know, the organizations can take, I would say, a short-sighted approach or strategy and not being realistic and maybe honest about what it takes, you know, the time, money, and effort to implement a strategic decision or a strategic, I should say, IT solution. And like you'd mentioned, typically you see they throw technology at it, but there is, you know, that's got to be aligned with, like you said, the business processes. And then there needs to be the adequate support of the organization behind that in terms of effective change management. But you're right. When you wrote this article, the first thing I thought about is, you know, this idea of technical debt is it often it's created by a short-sightedness of just throwing technology at an issue without really looking at the holistic strategy. So, Bob, from your experience implementing ERP, what would you say are the most critical aspects of ERP implementation, specifically in terms of project management? I know that you have a very strong, very successful background and strong project management experience. So anything you can share there?
Well, I'll break this down into a couple of things. First, what I think is really, really necessary for success, and then a couple of common challenges and pitfalls that I have run into on a regular basis. The first one I've kind of already mentioned, which is the importance of executive sponsorship. And when I say executive sponsorship, I generally mean the CEO. Yeah, you could maybe get some traction if it's the CIO driving it or the CFO driving it. But in both of the cases that I've seen where it was really, really successful, it was driven by the chief executive. Yeah. And the reason for that is that apart from that, there's going to be a general feeling among your employees, well, if it's not important to the CEO, then why should it be important to me? And the really successful projects I've seen have had that chief executive who was deeply involved in the project from the beginning. And in a very large organization, there's an executive steering committee involved, which oftentimes even involves the board of directors, because the type of money that you're talking about for some of these projects, which in a large organization can extend into tens of millions of dollars or more, often that kind of outlay has to be approved by the board of directors. And along with that, there's a couple of common challenges that I've seen. Very first one, the most common challenge, is this belief that I've seen practically every place that I've been involved in ERP, is that every business function believes that their processes are so unique and so proprietary that they could not possibly fit into the process proposed by the ERP provider. And this is a key point that was highlighted by the late Dr. Michael Hammer in his seminal lecture on how to be successful with SAP.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually Marianne Bradford who introduced me to this video. His statement was that everybody believes that they're different, and I prefer to use the term special. And while there may be a very small number of cases where a company's business processes are actually so proprietary and so good and so strategic that they can't be changed, most of the time, I find that's just not the case. ERP providers like SAP or Oracle do a huge amount of industry research to identify, you know, what are the best practices in that industry. And those practices can usually be adopted where there's actually a willingness to do so. But the standard catchphrase of we've always done it that way comes up a lot of the time. The reality is standardization can work. It's one of the most powerful benefits to be achieved with ERP. A couple of examples real quick I'll share with you. There was an auto parts supplier in South Carolina who presented at one of our ASUG meetings. They were a subsidiary of a parent company in Germany who set them up in the location where they were at to supply the BMW plant in Greer, South Carolina. And they told them that they were going to have the most plain vanilla SAP implementation. Nothing was going to be customized. Nothing was going to be changed. Their second, third line support was in Germany. So once, you know, 11, 12 o'clock came around, folks in Germany went home. U.S. didn't have that support. So the U.S. business in South Carolina was told, if you have a problem, first level support is Google. They did the entire project beginning to end in like 8 weeks. They had no problems. In the rare cases where they did see some unexpected, unexplained message, they went to Google. They found the answer. It was an incredible success. Second example is a life science company that presented at Sapphire in 2017, who worked with SAP on implementing a pre-configured solution. They gave SAP all of their information. Here's our company name. Here's our company codes, our plants, our sales organizations. A few weeks later, SAP handed them a pre-configured system and said, start testing your processes in it and let us know if you run into a problem. And the number of gaps that they encountered was very few. It wasn't as fast of an implementation as the parts supplier. I think it was maybe around 6-8 months or something like that. But this was roughly $1 billion a year global life sciences company. So they're dealing with regulatory issues. They're dealing with batch management, all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. And they were able to do it successfully in a completely standardized manner. So it can be done where there's the will to do it. The second challenge I'll mention real quickly here is getting your employees to understand how the work that they do impacts other parts of the organization. As an example, I had a situation that I was helping with at one company where the receiving department was making a number of receiving errors, that the correct purchase order wasn't being entered. and it was like wreaking havoc on, you know, matching of invoices and accounts payable down the line. But it was trying to get the people in that receiving department to understand, hey, this is actually really important. And, you know, the extra couple of minutes that we spend getting this right here can save us an hour of work down the line. And this is the point where we have to talk about silos, because you can't talk about ERP without talking about silos.
Yeah.
And again, Dr. Hammer referred to them as castles in his video, but silos is the more commonly accepted term. And there's a common belief in the ERP world that a successful implementation requires the breaking down of silos. You'll hear that term a lot. My experience leads me to a slightly different premise, which is that silos never completely go away. They just change form. And the reason for this is that silos are based on self-interest, and self-interest never goes away. Whether you're the manager of a department or a business function, or you're an employee in that department, everyone's concerned about how they're going to be impacted by the project. Those concerns are completely valid, and they must be acknowledged and addressed head on for the project to be successful. But even if you have a successful project, my experience is the end outcome of a successful ERP project is a new set of silos. So for example, you could have a warehouse department and a shipping department. And as part of your ERP implementation, those two silos are merged into a new supply chain silo. Well, now you have this new supply chain silo, which may itself be impacted 3 to 5 years down the road when you're doing another system upgrade and you still have to address their concerns. So, you know, my contention is that successful projects are less about the destruction of silos and more about the management of silos.
That's great insight, Bob. In your response, and again, for our listeners, the question was, what would you say are the most critical aspects of ERP implementation project management? And really, you covered on a few things that are critical, that in which requires very tactful and meaningful project management approach. And that is leadership. You talked about the value of standards and managing, you know, this idea of standards and industry standards. And you talked about effective communication and culture, if I had to summarize. And that's great. We could spend 2-3 hours just on a follow-up here.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a very big question that unfortunately required kind of a big answer.
Yeah. And Bob, I know that what I know of you and your work is you do. I mean, and that's why we asked the question. In terms of project management, there's very tactical things that you can do that help nurture all of those things, right? First part of your answer, you talked about the CEO and executive participation and setting the tone and being visible, basically, right?
Yep.
You know, you said, well, if it's not important to the CEO, then why would it be important to me? I believe is what you said. And that's huge. That's significant. So then what do you do within your project plan to make sure that happens from a tactical and practical level? Very insightful. So, Bob, just to kind of flip that question and maybe ask it a little bit differently, why do you think many ERP projects fail to deliver on expectations?
So there's obviously been a fair number of papers written on this, academic research, ERP failure case studies, you know, some of the more famous ones being, you know, Hershey and Waste Management and Nike and National Grid. There's a number of them out there. And they all highlight different reasons, and those reasons all have their own levels of validity. Based on my experience on a more limited sample size, the number one problem that I've seen kind of goes back a little bit to what we just talked about, which is an unwillingness to consider changes in the business process resulting in excessive customization.
Yeah.
And this was one of the key factors that was mentioned in the ScanSource failure case as well. As a result, no business improvement actually happens. Again, going back to Dr. Hammer, because I can't refer back to him enough on this. He referred to this as paving the cow path. And you're doing the same old stuff you did before. You're just doing it in a different system. Only now it's a system that's really difficult and expensive to maintain with all of that technical debt included that we already talked about. You know, some of the examples I've seen of this are just crazy. I saw a case where an SAP system was being implemented, and one of the systems it was replacing was a very old legacy homegrown mainframe system.
Yeah.
And there was one particular transaction, one particular screen in that mainframe system that the business just loved. and they actually created a custom transaction in SAP that exactly replicated that mainframe screen right down to every single field on the screen placed in the same place that it sat in the old mainframe system. The only difference between them was the mainframe screen was obviously, you know, black and white or black and green or whatever, and the SAP screen was in Windows. Other than that, there was no difference between them. It's really hard to look at that and view that as business transformation.
Yeah, exactly. Right. You know, so I think, Bob, you're saying, you know, one of the reasons that projects fail to deliver, and I think this is very true, and that is extensive customization and or failure to think outside the box and be creative and innovative during the implementation process. Right. And
yeah, one of the points made by Dr. Hammer is if you're looking at implementing an ERP system, but you fundamentally disagree with the processes that have been defined in that ERP product, you shouldn't be implementing it.
Yeah.
Because my experience over 20 years of doing this is when you fight the system, you lose every time.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And I think, Bob, you know, to your point, I think that's why ERP system selection is so crucial. And I know at Nestle & Associates, you know, we are vendor neutral and we always will be for a reason, because there's value in a very vendor neutral objective approach to selection. And not all ERP systems are created equal, right? I mean, sure, they all can take a sales order and some of them might require 5 keystrokes, some might require 15. You know, that's more of a functional level thing, but also in the way that they model your business. And you remember what you were saying at the beginning, you defined ERP as a way in which to basically manage your financials, right? To automate financial postings. Because at the end of the day, transactions are dollars for the most part. So I think that the more that you can accurately pick a system that best represents your business model, you know, the better off you're going to be. And to be able to do that in a way that requires less customization. There's definitely a balance there. And I'm definitely not saying I'm an advocate for no customization at all. I think every organization, as you referred to earlier, is unique. And sometimes that's required. But I think once you get to the point where, as you're saying, there's extensive customization, and that can really create all sorts of issues and also create a lot of technical debt.
Yeah.
So I will refer back quickly to the very first project I ever did, and we'll talk about that more a little bit as well, was also a very standardized approach. It reduced, you know, third-party systems and interfaces by a huge amount. It was definitely an adopt versus adapt approach, you know, adopting the built-in processes. And after that system was implemented, that system ran for 10 years without upgrade because it just did everything that needed to be done.
Mm-hmm. So, Bob, you'd mentioned in a couple of your answers here already so far, this idea of leadership and effective communication and culture. So I know this is a loaded question, but what role does the overall corporate culture play in ERP organizational change, and why? Why not just implement, like you said, the right solution so you don't spend a lot of time, money, and effort on customizations and just call it a day with a successful implementation? Why does culture even matter?
So there's a reason why Peter Drucker said that culture eats strategy for breakfast. It's one of my favorite business quotes. And it's because the overall culture is so crucial to the success of any kind of a business transformation. A very closed culture based upon individual players defending their turf is going to make it very difficult to achieve any level of meaningful improvement. Mm-hmm. A more open and trusting culture where people understand the interdependencies both upstream and downstream with other parts of the business is much more likely to result in positive organizational change. The tough thing about this is that culture has to already exist. You can't just go to the business on Friday and say, hey, we've got this ERP project we're going to do, and we're going to need this new culture to do it. And the new culture starts Monday morning. You and I know that cultures develop within an organization over a period of years.
Yeah.
And so that has to be kept in mind going into the project. If you're planning this journey for this ERP implementation, you have to know what kind of culture you actually have and therefore what kind of challenges in that area you're going to expect when you get into that project.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the challenge there is that culture to a lot of people is a very abstract thing, and it's hard to see, it's hard to measure, it's hard to kind of grab onto and bite into. And so one of the things we do at Nestle & Associates is we try to take something that's kind of abstract and make it more concrete. So we definitely have technical and tactical ways to do that because we do that at the onset, you know, to your point, that culture takes years to build and to get to the point it's at. So if you don't have the right culture at the onset of a project, things can go sideways pretty quickly. One of the things that of my interest in, and very much through formal, a lot of formal research as well as informal research, one of the things that I'm seeing is without a doubt is for those organizations that have been successful, and of course, success is a bit subjective, but in which the organization deemed its ERP organizational change effort to be successful, there are some common denominators. And that is that the leadership is very much focused on trust, on empathy. They're very transformational. So it's a kind of a transformational leadership mindset. And those are all what I would consider very much cultural elements. So it's absolutely critical to organizational change.
Yes, it is.
So, Bob, what about training and learning or learning and development, L&D, in the organization? To what extent do you suggest and encourage opportunities for training and learning throughout the entire life cycle of the project, right? So before implementation, during, and post.
So this is a huge topic, which is why you actually have complete episodes of your podcast devoted to it.
Yeah,
exactly. And when I go back to that same 2020 ERP report that I referenced earlier, I see that the most common change activity among organizations that completed ERP implementations was customized training.
Yeah.
And it was by a pretty comfortable margin. Based on my experience, I think there are a few keys to success here. And the first one is that the training has to be representative of what your employees are actually going to see when they start using the new system. And this could be challenging early on where you don't have a system configured, developed, built yet. So you may have some early demos where you're using some generic data just to help show your business customers the overall look and feel of the new system. But as you get close to go live and you've got a pretty much completed system, this is where you need to put together data that actually looks like the data that they're going to see on go live day.
Yeah.
And your training has to be as realistic as possible, as representative as possible of what they're actually going to be using in their job. And the second thing is that the training has to happen as close to go live as possible. And this is challenging because if cases where I've been involved at a go live on a large manufacturing site where there's 500, 800 employees, you're trying to schedule training for that number of people as close to go live as possible, like, you know, the 2 weeks preceding go live, but you also have to keep the business going, avoid business disruption. It's actually pretty challenging to do, but it's really important for that training to be as close to go live as possible so that the material is as fresh in their mind as possible. And then lastly, the training material needs to be available post go live as well in a manner that is friendly and easily accessible to your people on the job whenever they need it. And what's really important is as you make changes to your system, because changes will happen in the post go live environment, that training has to be kept current. And it's particularly important as you're hiring new employees after go live, because you want your new employees to get up to speed as quickly as possible. One current trend in ERP world is company specific contextual health is actually embedded within the application, to where they go into a particular application and they click on a particular field and there's help right there saying, hey, this is what you're supposed to put in this field. You know, there's a couple of products out there. SAP Enable Now is kind of the leader in this space, but there's some others out there as well.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a good point to mention the concept of super users, because super users are really important to successful ERP in an organization. These are your employees who are most familiar with the system, and they're willing to be your boots on the ground to help their fellow employees in the workplace. They're the ones that are helping as those new employees come in and helping to acclimate them and get them familiar with the system. It's a topic that's a whole episode unto itself. And
yeah,
if you want to learn more about it, I would highly recommend a book called The Super User Revolution by Ginger Luttrell and the late Michael Doan.
Very good book.
Really good read on that topic.
Yeah.
One final point I want to make on training, this is really important. This may be your last opportunity to get feedback from your employees regarding any possible defects in the system. Because if there's something that's not working exactly as it should, it's going to become very apparent during that training. And I'll share with you an example that I had, which was just huge and stays with me to this day. My very first project, we had a project methodology that included something called playbacks, where during the course of the project, we had three playbacks where we would meet with our business counterparts. So the first one early in the project to kind of just talk about, hey, here's our high-level design. About halfway through, we had one to say kind of like, hey, here's where we're at so far. Are we on the right path? And then the final playback was very close to go live, where we had a completed system that we could really show them what it was going to look like. Here's the design. Does this fit? And in this particular project, I was responsible for implementing credit management and accounts receivable. And the key objective in our area was automated cash application based upon a file that we imported from a bank lockbox. And I spent months testing this, sample files in the test environment. And I had set the system up in such a way that I wanted everything to be automatic. And so if a payment came in from a customer and there were differences on it, the system would automatically create what was called a residual item, would automatically put the differences on the account. My thinking was, we'll be sitting there, our employees go into the customer account, they see these residual items and they just deal with them, do whatever they have to do. So I stand up in front of the whole department. We got the system up on a screen. I do an import. Show them the results. Here's what it looks like. What do you think? And keeping in mind, this is my first project. I'm very proud of myself. I'm standing there beaming ear to ear, like, how y'all like my shiny new sports car?
Yeah.
And they all got this horrible look on their face. They were like, that's not the way it works. We have to decide what goes on the account. Sometimes if it's an important customer, we might not even keep it on the account. We just write it off. This is bad. We can't live with this. And so it's a week before go live, and they just told me that my key design is all wrong. And so I go scrambling back to my desk, and I'm looking through configuration and looking through help files and all this kind of thing. And fortunately, the solution turned out to be a very simple setting and payment tolerances that when I set it the right way, the system never created a residual item. Got them back together a couple of days later. Here's what it looks like now. Problem solved. But if I hadn't had that final point of feedback a week before, our go live could have been a disaster.
Yeah, important point. Interesting example. You know, obviously, I know you have some great experience and you take training very seriously. And you're right, by the way, for our listeners, we have had several podcasts just on L&D specifically. You know, that includes our Dr. Clark episode and Dr. Kirkpatrick and Guy Wallace, and specifically talking a great deal about learning and development and training. And I think that, as you mentioned here, Bob, you know, this idea that, you know, it's about, you know, how do your employees or your stakeholders receive the training? How do they acquire the knowledge? And then how do they apply that? You know, I think that's so important. And to do that effectively and efficiently is one thing. You know, that's pretty important stuff here. But then at the end of the day, all of that has to be done in a manner, you know, this training has to be done in a manner that delivers results and ROI to the organization. So very insightful comments here, Bob. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
In fact, I think that we need to get you back on to discuss a couple of points, and this is one of them.
Happy to do that.
Learning and development specifically. So when you go through an ERP organizational change process, are there ever any conflicts? And we've asked other guests this exact same question, but it's always interesting to get people's responses to this question as well. So are there ever any conflicts, or is everything just as we call kumbaya?
No, there's never conflict. Everybody's smiling.
Yeah, right.
We know the answer to that, right? Conflict is everywhere during an ERP project. And it just varies in scope and intensity based upon the existing culture, which we already talked about, the degree to which organizational change management is practiced effectively. You just have to know going in that it's going to happen. If you're somebody who's kind of thin-skinned and averse to conflict, then ERP projects probably isn't what you should be doing.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so true. It is a tough business, and you do have to have thick skin and have the right social skills, as you mentioned before, because that's a huge part of it. You know, and it does go back to culture and this idea of healthy and productive conflict, right? I think conflict's okay. I think it's okay to have disagreements, but it's just how, as an organizational culture, how do you talk through that? How do you deal with it? You know, how do you make it productive? But absolutely, there's a place in ERP organizational change for disagreement. And sometimes that disagreement can be pretty strong. But yeah, as you said earlier, you made a really important point that you don't change culture immediately upon the start of an ERP project, but yet that project, that culture can have significant impact. And this is one way in which, you know, it can have a very serious impact on the success of an ERP implementation.
Yep. And I mean, it's important to remember some conflict is necessary.
Yeah.
Because groupthink doesn't help anybody.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And you just have to, you have to be able to manage it.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you don't have a organizational culture that supports conflict or productive conflict and disagreement, then you're also going to stifle innovation and creativity, which is a critical aspect of success.
Absolutely.
So, you know, we talked a little bit earlier, and I think you mentioned, you kind of in part answered this question earlier, but this is a really fun topic for me to explore, and I've done this in great depth over the years. But I just want to ask you explicitly this question. What leadership styles or attributes would you say were the most prevalent during the best of your ERP implementation experiences? So if you had to take a step back and look at the, let's maybe look at it in terms of the individual leadership style of the CEO, but maybe as the executive team in general, would you say there's any common denominators there?
Yeah, I would say that the qualities that make a successful leader in any other area are pretty much the same qualities that lead to success leading an ERP project.
Mm-hmm.
I've already mentioned my first ERP project, that it remains the best project that I ever did. And the leader of that project remains the best leader that I ever had. And I'm not, in this case, I'm not talking about the chief executive. I'm talking about actually the head of the project, the person who came and asked me to be part of the project.
Mm-hmm.
And from the time that project began, she was always at the forefront. She was always accessible. She was always encouraging, always willing to listen, never dismissive of anything that we had to say. You know, even when she had to deliver a tough message, you know, it was delivered in a respectful and empathetic manner. She made sure that we had what we needed to get the job done. She made sure we were rewarded for our efforts because, you know, it was an ERP project. We were working our butts off. But the result was that we were incredibly loyal to her. You know, I think it's safe to say we would have gone to hell and back for her. And, you know, I still keep in touch with her on LinkedIn. And, you know, frankly, she still remains the model of leadership for me.
So it sounds like you're saying trust and empathy are two significant qualities, or I should say leadership attributes.
Absolutely. I mean, empathy is a huge part of it. But the nature of these projects is they're hard. Everybody's working a lot of hours. Everybody's dealing with the conflict. If you're on the project team, you got people in the business that are mad at you. Having a project leader who's beating you over the head, you know, it doesn't accomplish anything. You need a leader who, there's times when they do have to give you a little bit of a kick in the butt to keep things going, but they also understand the pressure that you're under and they know how to manage that. So hugely important.
Yeah, absolutely. So Bob, I just want to go back for a second. You know, earlier I asked you about project management and some of the critical tactical components of project management, but specifically, what value do you put in incident management and change management, and how do you tactically manage that? You know, so an incident occurs that you didn't expect, and therefore you kick in the gear with change management. Can you give our listeners some sense of how you would walk through that process and maybe what that looks like?
Sure. So I view incident management and change management primarily as post-implementation topics. And kind of the starting point for this is really ITIL in terms of definitions. But my experience is during the implementation phase, during testing, we're dealing with defect management, right? We're finding issues in the system and we're fixing them. Once we go live post-implementation, now something doesn't work the way it's supposed to and it impacts the business. This is what ITO refers to as an incident.
Yeah.
From an academic perspective, you know, there's been far more research and way more papers written on the project implementation process than the post-implementation support phase. In reality, post-implementation support is by far the longest phase of the ERP lifecycle. It may ultimately consume more financial resources than the original project, and it becomes the foundation for future successful upgrades and enhancements to your system. So this makes the topics of incident and change management really important. Incident management, as I said, is a case where the system is not working according to specifications, and therefore it's preventing your business from doing their job effectively. Change management in this case refers to system changes, not organizational change, and it's about managing the required changes to keep your ERP system running in a manner that maintains the integrity of the system and keeps it working as it should, including up-to-date documentation, because that part is huge. And it's especially important in regulated industries like life science that are subject to inspection. So system change management is a huge topic unto itself, probably the subject of its own podcast episode. From a technological standpoint, a lot of different systems out there to do it, whether you're using something like ServiceNow, which is a very well-known IT service management system right now, or any number of other types of software solutions.
Yeah, you know, some great points there, Bob. And I like what you said about the idea of post-implementation support, right? Because really when you hit that switch, there's a couple of things that are for certain. Number one, you're going to have that post-productivity dip. You know, I think that's a fact that any ERP practitioner would recognize and admit. So you always have that post-go-live productivity dip, which therefore requires time, money, and effort, you know, to get past that and commitment. And I think that the second thing is that when you do hit that switch, really, that's just the start of opportunities for continuous improvement for years to come,
yes,
right?
Absolutely.
You built that foundation and you put this time, money, and effort into it. And really, it is a tool that helps you to continue to get better and better and better. And for an organization to think all that's going to happen on day one, I think is horribly misleading. But then you're right. In order to get to that point, you know, the time and money and effort after the go live is significant. You know, we had a guest and friend and colleague, Greg Shoemaker, was on, and we talked about this idea. I believe this was episode 28. We talked about this idea of center of excellence for ERP support. And
yep.
The idea there is I really like that name because it really sends a message to your organization that, yeah, it is all about putting the foundation in. It's about continuous improvement, and it's about getting better and better and better. And so that's a great point that you bring up.
Well, you made a great point as well about that productivity dip, because you're exactly right. There's always what a lot of times is referred to as a ramp-up phase to try and get the organization back to a pre-project level of productivity. There's always a phase in there. Some places call it urgent care. Some places call it hypercare, where maybe four,
yeah.
6, 8 weeks.
And yeah.
The project team remains kind of all hands on deck for anything that comes up. And that phase is really when your incident and your change management processes get their first baptism by fire.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Great answer. How insightful. So, Bob, I am going to put you on the spot, and I'm going to ask you to only choose four. And I know you have a much greater list than this, but again, I'm going to put you on the spot. And as succinctly as possible, what would you say were the most critical success factors that facilitated your success? If you could only give me four, what would those be?
Okay. I think the first one is the ability to grasp technical concepts and turn them into a successful business solution. Because, you know, when I started my first project, I'd never seen SAP before. There were hours spent just sitting around figuring something out. And technology is an integral part of ERP. As we said, it's not the be-all, end-all. There's more to it than that. But there's a need in this business to be a naturally inquisitive kind of person. And I think that's helped me.
Mm-hmm.
Second thing is the ability to explain technical concepts in non-technical terms.
Yeah.
Okay. Your business customers don't want a doctoral thesis on the cool SQL code that you wrote for them.
Right.
And they want an explanation that mere mortals can understand. And this is what I mean by the term bridging the gap between business and technology.
Mm-hmm.
Third thing that I learned along the way was the ability to work within stated limitations to create a workable solution. Because there's often a box that you've been placed in, and that box is created by either technical or cultural limitations. And we always wish the box was bigger. But we have to find a workable solution that fits within that box.
Yeah.
And the last thing, which I've learned along the way that I think is really important, is the ability to present ideas persuasively to the business community, to your fellow project team members, because at the end of the day, we're all salespeople. And in order to achieve success, we have to be able to overcome objections and sell the benefits of our ideas just as if we were selling any other product. And this applies not just to projects, but really to every aspect of our lives. It is critically important in the business world because we go to work every day and we're trying to convince our coworkers of the best way to do things.
Yeah.
But it certainly applies, I think, universally across many aspects of our lives.
Yeah, absolutely. Great points. You know, I can't help but think on at least a couple of these points, you know, and you mentioned the idea of bridging the gap between business and technology and being able to, you know, persuade the business community and the stakeholders, you know, really of the return on investment and the purpose. And I think it to me, that kind of ties back to the emphasis that I know you place on training, right? And training, not only technically, but in concept and spirit, right? So
yep.
Being able to take and transfer this very, it is a technical exercise. I mean, it's applications and bits and bytes and, you know, they're run on server somewhere and it's very much a technical exercise. But at the same time, it is important that the purpose of this technology and the way you're going to utilize this technology is communicated in a way that shares the idea of doing this to begin with and concept and spirit and how that ties to your mission, your vision, your values and your purpose. So I think, you know, these are great points that I think are often underestimated, actually. So, all right, Bob, this has been a fun conversation, some great insight, and I really appreciate it. One more question for you, and this is one of my favorite questions. As a fellow practitioner, you and I both agree that we absolutely benefit from learning from our colleagues and friends and boots on the ground, as well as researchers. How would you summarize this conversation? Meaning, if you had to distill your work in the 3 or 4 sentences, your experience, your challenges, your successes, what would you say to ERP organizational change practitioners? What advice can you leave our listeners with?
Well, I'd wrap it up in 3 very brief points. The first one is one that, you know, in the academic world I've shared with some of our students. And this is to first recognize that you won't win every battle. That even within an ERP transformation project, it's not possible to change everything that you want to change. And so you have to pick your battles carefully, and you have to look first for low-hanging fruit before you take on the big stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be able to recognize when pushing any further is going to do more harm than good and be willing to accept the outcome. And I think that one is just, it's hugely important. The second point I would emphasize is to really listen to what the business is saying. In my experience, successful business process management involves getting the right people in the room, asking the right questions, and really listening to their answers. And there's an art to that, and there's a resource I want to recommend on that as well, which is the Deep Listening podcast with Oscar Trimboli. There's some really great stuff in that podcast about listening. And finally, the last thing that I'll close with, which I know was also shared with you by Dr. Bradford, is to always remember that the soft stuff is the hard stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't get hung up on the technology. You'll figure that out. It's the conflict and the resistance to change that have to be managed to be successful.
Yeah. So important. I really like that. So your advice is, number one, don't bite off more than you can chew. Otherwise, you can choke. Number two, empathy and effective leadership is absolutely critical. And I will share your reference to Oscar Trimboli's information in our show notes as well. So I appreciate you bringing him up. And then lastly, we will definitely reference Dr. Bradford's podcast as well, because it was a really good podcast. She has a great book. But the idea that, yeah, the soft stuff is the hard stuff couldn't be any more true. And I think that, you know, Bob, I will say that in my view, I'm not sure how you feel, but the way I consider our practice, basically what you and I do and many others, ERP organizational change, is it's really a quarter technology, right? Information technology, business systems. Mm-hmm. It's about a quarter business process, right? Really understanding the business processes and how to support them and what those requirements are. but it's a huge chunk. And I would say maybe 50% soft stuff. It's leadership. It's all the great points you brought up today. Organizational culture, transformational leadership, empathy and trust and building communication between silos. And there's a lot there that has a significant impact on effective ERP organizational change. So good stuff.
Thank you.
Well, Bob, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. This was really fun. It was a pleasure. And we will be in touch soon because we're going to have you back. And I think we have some panels that we need to get you included on. So you'll be hearing back from me here soon. So thanks again, Bob, my friend. I really appreciate it. Take care, and we'll be in touch.
Well, thank you for having me as well. And just want you to know, I really do enjoy listening to the podcast. So be well and keep up the good work.
Thank you so much. Take care. Talk to you soon.
Listeners, thank you for joining us on today's episode. We are incredibly excited and grateful to have friends, colleagues, and mentors join us on our podcast. We have an incredible lineup of guests, including ERP and organizational change speakers, authors, professors, researchers, pioneers in the field, practitioners, PE partners, business executives, ERP vendors, and organizational stakeholders. We invite you to leave us feedback and a review because we want to make this the most useful and insightful podcast you listen to. And we need your help to do so.
Thank you, listeners, for being with us again this week as we seek to, one, promote, connect, and foster relationships in the ERP organizational change community, two, contribute to the field of ERP organizational change, and three, bring research and practice closer together. Please join us again next week as we discuss the latest ERP organizational change research, practice, and stories. Our podcast will draw on knowledge from extensive research, collaborative learning, and practitioner expertise and experience.
From everyone here on the team, Jack, and myself, we wish you a great week, and we hope to see you again soon on another episode.
Hashtag the ERP Organizational Change Journal. Have a fantastic week.
Bye for now.